Struggle to find plot. Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
Oh, you better believe it. It's time to talk movies and more. Pass the Popcorn. Alan Adams with us in studio. Hello, Mr. Adams.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Good, thank you. We were catching up here during the break. Missed seeing you last week. Good to have you back as we return from vacation.
Yeah, no, it's, well, you know, it's. I think it's important for you to take a step back every once in a while. I feel like you could, I feel like we all benefit from a little break every now and then, regardless of what you wind up doing. If it's something, if it's nothing, sometimes nothing's better than something.
Yeah, yeah. And we did a little both. Did some somethings and then a fair amount of nothing, which was fine too.
That's how you do it.
I like that.
Like, that's
like
good
it.
Work.
And I was talking about it earlier because my brain, I'm wired for a school schedule. So for me, a couple of weeks and then you know, it's fall.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're, you know, you work at the university, so while you're not tied to it, you work all year. You don't get your summer off, but it'll change dramatically when the students show up.
Oh, well, yeah. It's, I mean, it goes from, you know, campus being not quite a ghost town, but pretty pretty sparsely populated to, oh, yeah, here's 10,000 more people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's, but no, it's good. Like, everybody seems to be getting their ducks in a row, and it seems like it's going to be a pretty exciting school year for some folks. So.
Yeah, excellent. Looking forward to it. Well, also, let's mention what's coming up Friday. I was saying earlier, you got three chances left to see the focus group do our improv thing at the beautiful Bangor Arts Exchange. So I would think savvy consumers of fine comedy entertainment would want to embrace all three.
You would think, right? And I mean, the folks listening to this show are smarter than your average bear.
Exactly.
So I would assume that they in particular would be interested. Yeah, no, the we're doing a show. It's 8 o'clock. Friday night, August 16th, doors open at 7:30. Yeah. I mean, like it's going to be weird walking away.
Yeah.
Like, I mean that place has been home for like 7 years at this point, you know, and it's too bad. It will be missed. I'm sure, we will find our way wherever that way may lead us. We will land on our collective feet. I have no doubt.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we'll still be doing shows somewhere. We don't know quite where yet, but in the meantime, get over there to BAE Friday night, 8 o'clock. Check it. It's only $10.
Right. And it's
you're going to get at least $11 worth of laughs.
Well, all right. Easy.
$10.50.
Yes. No, but again, it is, it's a beautiful space and, the opportunity to engage with it. The clock's ticking, you know what I mean?
Right.
And, you know, it's nice to have a chance to an extended chance to say goodbye. So we hope that you will join us, and not for nothing, but it's 2 days before my birthday. So I can't think of a better gift.
There you go. And you know, we were chatting about this, I think, backstage before the last show. You know, people say, oh, it's too bad we're losing these arts venues with the BAE, Queen City Cinema Club shutting down. But then you don't always see those people going to arts events. And so I would say this, and you know, I don't want to be the school marm, though I am scolding people. But look, if you would like more arts opportunities and arts venues, one way to really ensure that is to get out and support those that are happening.
Right. You got to, I mean, it's all well and good to, you know, to talk about, you know, to eulogize something when it's gone. But, you know, maybe try to embrace it while it's here. There are ways to do that, and I hope that that our group is in some small part of that, I guess.
Yeah, and I would say to the people who come to see us, I know summer's busy, a lot going on, but man, we had a hell of a crowd when we did the Orono Arts Festival back in June. You know, if you're a Bangor area supporter and fan of the focus group, I don't think you want Orono walking away with that title for the summer of the biggest crowd.
No, you certainly don't. You certainly don't. You know, and it's one of those things where, you know, our subsequent shows, like we're doing one at the tail end in September. Our favorite, one of our favorites, our fundraiser for the Bangor Humane Society's Paws on Parade, which will be the show September 27th. Paws on Parade is September 28th. And then, you know, and then mid-October, and that's it.
Yeah.
So, August 16th, come on out. It's, Well, it's the last non sort of specifically themed, you know, it's not Paws on Parade, it's not the last show. So here's the thing. It's gonna get weird.
Oh yes.
It is gonna get real weird. Right. So if you wanna enjoy some of that, and I think you do, you should come check us out this Friday night.
I think I know how old you're going to be.
Yeah, you probably do.
Yeah. You're not anywhere near a round number, so you're okay for a while.
Well, I'm kind of close. I'm kind of close to a round number. Yeah. It's one of those things where I am, well, as we all do when our birthdays approach, we take stock of our own mortality.
Oh yes, yeah.
And you know, judge where we are right. on that.
It used to be just, am I going to get a bike this year? Now it's, is this the last one?
Yep. Will I blow out candles again? And if the trade-off is, you know, my back stops hurting, I don't know. I mean, that might be okay.
Right, exactly. Well, any plans for your birthday this year?
Nothing specific. We've been kind of kicking around the idea of maybe trying to do some sort of, like, out-in-the-world social thing on Saturday night. One of the things I brought up to Sheridan, just because I haven't done it in a million years, I was like, I might want to go bowling.
As funny as when you said that, I thought maybe he's going bowling.
I'm thinking about it. Like, no, you know, we're not, we haven't cemented anything, which, you know, it's, I mean, we have until this weekend.
Right.
Like,
right,
why would I plan something now?
Right.
When I can just, you know, send a group text at, like, you know, at 3 o'clock Friday afternoon being like, hey, what's everybody doing tomorrow night? So we'll see.
There you go. Well, we'll see Friday either way.
Yes, sir.
Alan Adams with us here. Let's talk movies. What have you seen since last we chatted?
Well, I got to see a couple this weekend. A couple of it was an interesting movie going experience because I got to see a couple of movies of the type that I wasn't certain we were going to see a lot of anymore, and so this was kind of nice. I went to the theater. And I saw the new film It Ends With Us. It stars Blake Lively, based on the novel of the same name by Colleen Hoover, which was a wildly popular book about, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago. And so I saw that at the theater. And then on Apple TV Plus, I saw a movie called The Instigators, starring Matt Damon and Casey Affleck. Directed by Doug Liman from a screenplay co-written by Affleck. And so it was, well, again, it's a movie that 20 years ago would have probably done $30 million at the box office. And instead, it's on Apple TV Plus, and so literally no one but me is going to see it. Which one do you want to talk about first?
Let's start with It Ends With Us, because I think we may talk more about The Instigators.
Yeah. So here's the great thing about something like It Ends With Us. Like, you know, based on a best-selling novel, got some name talent involved with it, but also some faces that weren't familiar to me, but apparently are familiar to the youths. Yes, the director, who also stars, apparently made his bones as a featured character on some CW show. And I'm like, I don't know anything about that. they're billing it as a romantic thriller, which is that's as good a title for it as anything, I guess. But it is the sort of movie that I didn't think they were going to make anymore, honestly, because, you know, it's a mid-budget sort of movie. I think the budget was something like $25 million, theatrical release. I will say, I think we've got a good shot at getting more of them because it was wildly successful.
Oh, really?
This weekend. Mm. Yes. It's so successful, in fact, that that Blake almost knocked her hubby off the number one spot at the box office.
Wow.
Yeah. Not quite. Didn't quite get there. as a fun fact, I don't know if it's the first time, but I have to imagine it's been a while since a father, husband and wife duo had the top one and two, the top two movies at the box office at a given weekend. So anyway, so this movie, it's basically about a woman named Lily Bloom, played by Blake Lively, who who's opening a flower shop. So Lily Bloom Flower Shop. This is what we're talking about here.
I got you.
Her father passes away and she moves to Boston and she's going to open a flower shop. Like that's been her lifelong dream. She wants to do that. In the process of doing that, she meet cutes, and again, the names, gentleman by the name of Ryle, R-Y-L-E, Ryle Kincaid, played by,
this is not a Hallmark movie now.
Oh, hold on.
Oh, okay.
This is played by Justin Baldoni, who is also the director of the film. She resists because, you know, she's struggles with her past and, her relationship with romance has been skewed by the combative nature of her parents' relationship, which involves a degree of violence. And so she struggles to get close to anyone. She struggles, and yet, he's a playboy, and she's like, I don't want any of that. But they keep crossing paths, including when his sister winds up working at the flower shop. His sister, played by the always wonderful Jenny Slate.
Oh, she's great.
Yeah, and she's really carving out a niche in this kind of part. I think, she doesn't need to work because her husband, played by Hasan Minhaj, is very wealthy. But soon, they keep crossing paths, and eventually the romance starts to bloom and whatever. Meanwhile, we start to get these sort of interspersed flashbacks to Lily's teen years when she developed a friendship and later more with a young man named Atlas, who was squatting in the abandoned house next door. And so we see their relationship sort of grow in the, in the past, while we see the development of her relationship in the present. We start to see some of the same signs in Ryle that we saw in her dad, and perhaps he's not such a good guy, and there are some things that happen that are they accidents? Are they on purpose? It's difficult to tell. It's very the framing is very deliberate. Although our girl Lily tells us very early on, like literally says as a line of dialogue, "I'm an unreliable narrator," and so we're not sure exactly what the truth is, and it's only exacerbated when it turns out that our man Atlas has gone on to become a noted restaurateur and has opened the hottest new joint in Boston. And wouldn't you know it, they wind up going to have dinner there. Oh. And then, things start worlds to get collide. Complicated. Oh. And then, the aftermath of some of these accidents comes to the forefront. And then that complicates relationships as well. And it all gets very sticky. I'm not going to go too much into the plot simply because I don't want to spoil anything. I imagine the majority of people who go to see this film are at least familiar with the book.
Right.
But it's funny. Walking out, talking to Sheridan, you mentioned a Hallmark movie. I'm like, I can't tell if this is the tamest late night Cinemax movie I've ever seen. Or the sexiest Hallmark movie.
Oh, there
it's,
you go.
It's somewhere. It's one of those two things, and I'm not entirely sure which. Look, I'll be real. I enjoyed this movie more than I thought I was going to.
Really?
Yeah. Well, it's funny because, and I say this as someone who actually quite likes what I've seen her in. I don't think Blake Lively has a ton of range as an actress. However, a role like this is very much in that wheelhouse where she can sort of play that kind of, almost a cipher. Like she's like I don't want to call her a blank slate because that sounds sort of insulting. And I don't mean it that way, but she really serves this. She's really wonderful at being like the screen on which the audience can project their own, their own feelings, their own engagement. And in a movie like this, where, you are sort of delving into some trickier sorts of realms, I think it really works. And look, I don't want to give the impression that this is somehow a capital I important movie discussing, contributing to the discourse surrounding domestic violence. It is not that. If nothing else, things go remarkably well for our main character with regard to that situation. whether we're talking about, like, you know, support or, you know, the willingness of the people around her to take her at her word, rather than, you know, there's not a lot of the sort of, anyway, I'm not going to get into the weeds as far as that's concerned. But honestly, like, I just walked out of there kind of stoked that the movie exists in the first place, because we've talked about this a bunch, Rich, and it's, I say this as someone who, I love the big popcorn, yeah, blockbusters, you know, I love a comic book movie, you know, I love a sequel, but one of the things that I think has been sorely missed at the movie theater, certainly in the last few years, is this kind of like mid-budget, like, movie for, you know, a specific grown-up audience. Mm-hmm. And the fact that this movie not only got made, not only got released in theaters, but made a lot of money, I hope that the studios take a lesson from this. And it is like, there is an audience for more sophisticated, I don't even know if I can call this more sophisticated fare, but like more, like we've talked about, like, movies for grownups. I think that's a really good way to sort of couch it.
Especially in the summertime.
You know, it's like, and you know, and a lot of people have sort of alluded to that fact. Like, it's basically like this movie is serving as counter programming of a sort to the, you know, the bells and whistles of something like Deadpool and Wolverine, and the absolute deluge of giant animated, you know, family fare. Like, I mean, I hesitate to call it a date movie because of a lot of the subject matter, but it is the sort of movie that, you know, that two adults could go to, you know, and not feel like they have to go and, you know, drag the kids or, right, or whatever. So yeah, like, is it a good movie? I think for what it is, particularly at this time and place, you know, in the sort of box office firmament, like, I think it's a movie that is very much appropriate for its time and place. And so hopefully folks will see the success of a film like this, the financial success, commercial success, critical success. Honestly, I don't think anyone cares. You know, this movie's not winning any Oscars, right, but they made back triple their budget in the opening weekend. Mm. So, I mean, I think everybody's probably pretty satisfied with the project as far as that goes. And my understanding is Colleen Hoover is an extremely prolific writer. So I imagine we'll be seeing adaptations of other of her books. If they're not already greenlit, they're going to be greenlit very quickly.
We're talking movies. Alan Adams with us here on Pass the Popcorn. Well, let's stay in Boston for another film. This one actually shot there too. I don't know if the other was, but this one was shot in Boston. Well, of course it was, with Matt and Ben together again.
Yeah, you know, it's like I saw an ad for this movie maybe a month ago, and I had not heard one word about it. Like, I did not know it existed. I knew nothing about it, and I was like, Apple TV Plus, huh? because there are a lot of people out there, and, you know, you don't need to hear me discuss it. Like, it's out there in the discourse. But there are a lot of people out there talking about how baffling it is that Apple TV has spent so much money on all of these projects and seemingly refuses to promote them, like, in any sort of real way. Like, some of the best shows on television are on Apple TV Plus, and you wouldn't know it.
Right.
You know, and some of their original movies have been I mean, hell, Coda was an Apple TV Plus, right, movie, you know, and that won Best Picture.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's like these are quality projects being done. And yet Apple, like, I don't know. It's kind of, sometimes it feels like the whole service is just kind of like a big tax write off for Apple, mm-hmm, where it's just like, oh, well, if we spend all this money on these things, we don't have to pay taxes. And, you know, we don't really care about any of it. But you spend enough money and it's going to look good, and you're going to collect a real wonderful cast and creative team, which, by the way, the cast of this movie is stacked. I mean, stacked. Like, I mean, obviously you've got Damon and Casey Affleck as the sort of stars, but like Hong Chau, Michael Stuhlbarg, Paul Walter Hauser, wow, Ving Rhames, Alfred Molina, like Toby Jones, Ron Perlman. Like, I mean, it just goes on and on. Like, just an absolutely, like, just killer cast for what is a kind of goofy's not the right word, because it is, there's an underlying seriousness to it, but it's basically just like a, I mean, it's basically just like a, another like Boston heist movie, only the, you know, the cast of characters are a little bit, you know, dimmer.
Yeah, and we don't see Matt Damon doing a lot of comedies.
Yeah, and I mean, it's and again, like I said, like, comedy is maybe a little bit of a stretch. It's, but it is funny. Like, there are some very funny moments in it. But yeah, it's basically the gist of it is, it's two dudes from Quincy. You've got Rory, that's Damon, and Cobby, that's Casey Affleck. They've been recruited for a robbery. Like, they're gonna rob a party. They're gonna rob the celebration party for the new mayor's election. The new mayor, the current mayor, is played by Ron Perlman. And he is, I believe the word is corrupt.
Oh.
And so the plan set in motion by Stuhlbarg and Molina, I don't even know if I got names for them. It doesn't matter. But it's like, you know, they basically, they work in a bakery, like, in their, that's their front, which is hilarious. But yeah, so they organize this thing, and they bring in these two guys along with another dude played by Jack Harlow. That's a famous person. And they're going to basically go and steal the kickback money that is delivered on the night.
Oh,
because that's a thing, apparently. I'm like, sure, why not? It is all greatly complicated by the fact that the election is really close, and we're not entirely sure that Mayor Ron Perlman is gonna win re-election.
Oh boy.
And as it turns out, he's very nervous about that. Because if word gets out of what they've been doing, like, there's a whole lot of upper echelon political figures who are going to jail. So as you might imagine, everyone's a little on edge. And so when Rory and Cobby and the other dude show up, turns out there's already been a couple of runs, and so there's not a lot of money there. They take what they can get. They try to run. They inadvertently stumble onto a conversation between the mayor and his cronies. They improvise and steal some stuff, including things that they should not have stolen. And before you know it, everybody is on, like, everybody's looking for these dudes. Including a menacing, he's a cop, but it's unclear what part of, like, what his actual job is. That would be Ving Rhames. We have our finder, like, the guy that the gangsters send to collect them. That's Paul Walter Hauser. Getting tangled up in all of it is, Rory's an ex-Marine. His shrink at the VA, played by Hong Chau, winds up getting tangled up in all of this too. And so you've got this whole thing where it's basically two kind of inept dudes trying real hard not to get murdered or sent to prison as they find themselves way in over their heads in the corruption that surrounds the Boston political machine. It's a lot of fun. Like, I really enjoyed this movie. And like I said, like, this is the sort of movie that 20 years ago, I would have gone to see opening weekend.
Right.
You know what I mean? I would have gone to see this, and a lot of other people would have gone to see it too. But because of the nature of things, it's on a streamer that almost nobody has. Look, you can't have this many talented people involved in a project and have it not work at least a little bit. Like, you know, it's like the floor is really high for something like this. Like, Doug Liman directed, the script was by Chuck McLean and Casey Affleck. Damon and Ben Affleck produced. Obviously, I listed a bunch of actor names. Like, those are all extremely talented people. You put all those things together, and it's going to be good. But when you put it all together with a bunch of dudes who are clearly having fun, Like, that's the thing. Like, particularly in the supporting cast, like, everybody sort of surrounding our main two players is really just coming in and just throwing heat.
Well, and Perlman can choose scenery with the best of them.
And he is delightful. like, he is exactly, like, he is basically, like, he's basically a caricature of every single corrupt politician you've seen in popular culture, and it works.
Love it.
But yeah, but one of the joys of it, and it's interesting, one assumes that this was a deliberate choice due to scheduling or whatever, but it's like the majority of these things are like, they're very, like, everything's very sort of separate in that, like, you have all these incredibly talented people, but they're never on screen all together. You know what I mean? And so you have a lot of stuff where it's like, you know, like Hauser comes in for like two scenes and is just dealing, and then he's gone. You know what I mean? Like, but it's just like, he's so good, and he comes in like blazing hot, and then he's gone. And then you've got like this wonderful sort of, you know, bumbling's not even the right word. Maybe too big for their britches kind of vibe with Stuhlbarg and Molina, who have a bunch of scenes together. You know, Ving Rhames just like hulks through like various scenes. And then obviously you've got Damon and Affleck, who've known each other since they were like two. So it's like that chemistry is very real and very natural, and it plays really well. And so when you've got like that kind of relationship sort of as the anchor, the foundation of your film, like everything that spins off that, like, because it has such a solid foundation, like, they can really go for it in a way that maybe you couldn't have if you didn't have that kind of sort of like strong foundation. So, yeah, I mean, I love a heist movie anyway. I love a Boston heist movie in particular. Yeah. You might ask, is there an obligatory scene of Fenway Park at Winter? There is. nothing happens there, but like, it's like, oh, they got to show it to us.
And I saw an interview with Damon talking about what sounds like a pretty cool chase scene that they shot in Boston that apparently only Damon and Affleck could get away with doing in Boston.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's like you watch it and it's like, oh, man, like any normal, like even any normal like Hollywood person trying to pitch this. And they'd be like, no, sir. It's like, oh, Mr. Damon? Yes, yeah. Absolutely. By all means. What do you need? How many cop cars do you need us to blow up? Because we will do that. But yes, there's actually a couple of pretty spectacular chase scenes. Some good action sequences that you wouldn't necessarily expect. And then Damon's good. And you know who's really good? It's Casey Affleck. He's really good in this movie. And it's like, I always revert to like to him like sort of like goofballing his way through Good Will Hunting. And it's like he's like, I mean, that's a million years ago now. Yeah. You know, like the dude, you know, the dude has gone on to some acclaim.
Yeah, oh yes.
You know, in recent years.
And did frankly one of the great SNL sketches of all time with the Dunkin' Donuts.
Yes,
sketch.
Absolutely. You know, so he's really good in this. It's a great part for him. But that's the thing. It's like these guys, when they write, they're so connected to their subject material. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to do that and to be able to, you know, to create that sort of that sense of reality, even in the midst of an absurd kind of narrative, that's what grounds these movies. And this is one of them. Like, honestly, it's a real bummer that more people aren't going to see this movie. And who knows? Like, I don't know what the sort of afterlife is for these sorts of movies on these kinds of streamers. Like, maybe it moves to a different service where it has a shot at more eyeballs. I hope that happens because it is a movie that deserves to be seen. But if you have Apple TV Plus, by all means, watch this movie because it is a delight. And if you don't, I mean, there's a lot of good stuff on there.
Well, and I think half the free world gets a free subscription if they get a new iPhone.
You know what I mean? And it's like, I mean, it's like $6 a month or whatever. Like, it's you can make it work if you want to. Like, if hey, did you just get Peacock for a month so you could watch the Olympics?
Ding.
It's the same sort of thing.
There you go. Thanks, Alan.
My pleasure.
Alan Adams talking movies. Pass the popcorn here on Downtown on this Monday afternoon.